I have learned so much from Mike. It's not that I believe everything he says. I do my own thinking. But it so happens that a lot of what he says makes sense, and he has revealed a lot to me. Quit making decisions about your beliefs based on fear. Stop the fear. Just relax and trust God's love. Don't worry about what people are going to think. It's your life. Life is short, but yet at the same time, life is too long to live in a sort of hell. So do that thing you need to do to figure it out.
Webcasting to the world.
Do you remember the moment you saw yourself in God and God in you, and you were one with the universe and God and everybody?
Knowing the truth about the gospel.
You were one with the prostitutes and pimps and priests and kings, and there was nobody on earth that was better than you nor less than you.
That we are all righteous.
And no one on earth was any less in Christ than anyone else.
That's Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution.
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for the 20th of February 2014, coming to you from the GR Studios in Nashville, Tennessee. And here from Houston, Texas, hidden deep in the folds of the veil into the Holy of Holies, here he is, the founder and president of the Gospel Revolution, Michael Williams. G'day, Mike.
Good day, Bears Bartlett.
How you doing, bud?
I am so wonderful. Everybody is going to get to hear today that I have a guest at my home, and oh my goodness, I'm gonna let you surprise everybody with that. So
no, it could be Pope Francis, mate. But if it ain't me, I'm not interested in no.
Well, at least it sounds like you enjoyed being a guest at my house.
You bet. Are you kidding? Bubba Yeager's restaurant, no, right? Ribs, yeah. Hey, Mike, you probably have already heard that Nigeria is already exploding with Christian BS. This last week, we had an incident in Nigeria where gangs gathered together and hauled people that they claimed were gay out of their homes, beat them within an inch of their life, then took them to the police station, and the police then further beat them. I'm not sure how many deaths it incurred, but I do know this. Without Christian input from idiots, this would never have happened. It took Christianity to make this happen. 1, 2, 3, 4. Now, if you're listening to us for the first time, you won't be familiar with the program that we put to air a couple of weeks ago called IHOP, International House of Persecution, where we documented in their own voices Christian leaders in America who were raising funds from churches in America to send to Uganda, Nigeria, and other countries in order to lobby their government to change their laws to actually exterminate gays. That's right, I said exterminate gays. You don't pass laws in a country at Christian missionaries' insistence saying that on the second offense you'll face the death penalty, and not use that kind of language. Extermination of anyone that you don't like. My God, did we learn nothing from the ovens of Auschwitz and Dachau? Love thy neighbor? I don't think so. Let's try kill thy neighbor instead. All hail Christianity, eh?
Yes, the survival of Christianity comes on many levels. In this case, it is the survival of this particular group of people. And in most cases, even Christians can't survive Christianity, at least those that take it seriously. It's heartbreaking. Here we sit in the U.S. and all of these major changes are taking place here pertaining to this very issue. And it seems as though that is why they've gone there to do this, is that, from my understanding, Christians, they've given up on this godless nation of America and have exported their need to control. It always amazes me how that everyone is talking about this great fear of Sharia law, and here we go to Nigeria and Uganda and impose Mosaic law. It is just amazing. But it doesn't make any difference whose religious laws are there to persecute someone else. I don't care if it's Christians or the Taliban. It's all the same thing. When you are using God's laws to persecute another person, you cannot find anything worse than Christianity on the face of the earth.
We warned about this a couple of weeks ago. It was only a couple of weeks ago, Mike, when you and I warned that this would be the natural outcome of the kind of crap that Christian missionaries have gone to Africa and tried to, and they lobbied, they spent money that was given into the bag in Christian churches in America.
Yes.
And for most people, the churches that we're talking about are very, you know, most people would look at these churches and say, well, they're very stable. They're not overboard in any way. They're nice, good, strong, stable people. Let me tell you, you would be amazed who has put money into lobbying these governments and don't even know they've done it. If you want to find out, simply go back to that show, Google the names of the people that we have quoted and see for yourself. They use that money along with tax money because they lobby the government to make sure that this happens. Proof of that, of course, is the fact that even though the American ambassador to Nigeria after this deplored what happened, he assured Nigerians that the United States would not be cutting aid because of this law and of this incident. Well, it may have been obvious, but it's nonetheless highly tragic.
Yeah, Bess, you're... investigative reporting on that I thought was tremendous for anyone who falls outside of Mosaic law. You've got to understand that Christianity has a drastically mistaken view of what the ministry of the cross was all about. For anyone to think that as a believer in Christ, your job is to make sure that you or anyone else keeps Mosaic law is absolutely as bizarre as it can possibly be. You might as well be a member of Al-Qaeda because there is as little understanding about the work of the cross there in Christianity as what Al-Qaeda understands. They don't understand it at all.
Well, they don't even obey the New Testament law. By their own standards, out of their own mouths, they're hypocrites. When is Joyce Meyer going to put a hat on to teach people? When is she going to do that? I didn't think men were allowed to be taught by women, according to Paul, but not according to Joyce Meyer. That's a whole other thing. Or Gloria Copeland or Marilyn Hickey. It is such a self-serving... heck, it's a business, Mike. I mean, come on,
it's big business.
Yeah, we can't try and tie the hands of business. That'd be against the Commerce Act of the U.S. Constitution, wouldn't it? Between states or something?
Yes, absolutely.
And if it wasn't, you can be sure that the Christians we mentioned would be only too happy to make it that way.
Yeah, for sure. Well, our hearts go out to these folks. And even if Christ hadn't done away with the law, Ferris, the law was never used to judge somebody else. Paul explained that the law is only used to judge yourself. So how can you pass laws on a national basis to judge other people when God's law was only given to judge the individual who knew the law?
Well, it's easy. You just use self-righteousness.
Self-righteousness is the key.
You know, it's not the people who agree with us. It's the people who question us that help us make progress. That's how we've done it since day one. What are your thoughts on what we've just been talking about? Why don't you call me on area code 234-564-0971 and let us know what you think about that. Else you can just email us at freedom@gospelrevolution.com. That was freedom@gospelrevolution.com. What do you think about that? Revolution. I had a ball yesterday interviewing Grant Miller. Grant Miller, the author of the book Think and Be Free. Now, this is a man who I first heard on the webcasts, must be 3 years ago, just after he'd lost his leg in a motorcycle accident. And I was thoroughly impressed with the way that he was looking at his life through the eyes of the observer. Quite a guy, this. And he's the man that's sitting on your lounge room suite right now.
In your seat, Barris.
In my seat. Yeah, get him. Kick his butt. Listen. That's my seat. It's like the Big Bang Theory, isn't it? That's, you're sitting in my place.
Yeah, you're Sheldon. Yeah, that's my seat.
What a champ guy. How are you enjoying the visit, mate?
It's been really, really wonderful. He wanted to see what real Texas looked like. He did get to see some longhorns, but, you know, this is what he was expecting was those big open fields of cattle. But that is a few hundred miles from here.
That's a religious term, isn't it, longhorns?
Where you got longhorns?
Yeah, where you got – it's a sermon where you got a point here and a point there and a lot of bull in between, isn't it?
Yes, I am sure that that's exactly what that actually means. We went and visited a store that makes and sells saddles, and I was quite impressed. I wasn't about to buy a saddle, but if I were going to buy one, it would have been one of those. I just don't know what I would have put it on. But
mate, I had an unfortunate accident the other day. I was on a runaway horse.
Mm-hmm. I'm not biting. You're going to have to spend – you're just going to have to –
It was dreadful. It was mate, my life passed before my eyes. And if the manager,
tell us about it, Bears.
Well, if the manager of Walmart hadn't come out and pulled it out from the electricity plug, I'm telling you, I might not be here talking to you today.
I knew this was going someplace bad.
Well, why don't we take you straight to that interview now with Grant Miller? It was a fantastic time together, and my advice is sit down, buckle up, and enjoy the ride. So, we're talking today to Grant Miller. Grant, what's the Grant Miller story?
That's an interesting question. You know, everybody has a journey. You know, it really, it's like everybody else's story. Going from religion and a very conservative church, legalistic, to not just freedom to be real and authentic and to be you, not just freedom, but to actually know the legal payment of Christ on the cross, his shed blood and resurrection, and thereby redeeming all humanity, making God be true to his word in the prophecies, that what he said he was going to do, he surely and completely did.
What denomination was it?
It's Old German Baptist Brethren. It's like a very conservative Mennonite. You know, the men wore broad-brimmed hats. The women wore a special cut of dress and a covering on their heads, of course. We was very proud, very arrogant that we were the only church, the best church. You'd often hear ministers say, "You show me a better church and I would leave this one and join that one," you know, that sort of thing. I remember many services being opened by a minister telling some account of some conversation they had the previous week with some construction person or somebody at a store or whatever, and that they believed so and so, and they was saying thus and so, and he said, but then he would say, "But I'm so happy that I'm talking to a people that dot, dot, dot," you know. In other words, we are so much better than that.
Of course
we
are.
It was a narcissistic training hotbed.
It's like our poo smells better than your poo.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. Yeah. Oh, my. But, you know, we were proud of the fact that we kept the ordinance of feet washing and of the holy kiss.
Thank goodness you kept them.
Yeah. Men kissing men, you know, in their greeting. It was a right hand of fellowship, they called it, holy kiss on the lips.
Men kissing men, washing people's feet. What did this denomination actually have going for it? I've heard the worst.
Well, you know, they were going to go to heaven, or they hoped to. You know, that's what they had going for it. That's what they hoped for. Their prayers were, I call them modular prayers.
These were cut-and-paste prayers.
Yes, yes.
You put
these little segments together, like, and then, Lord, when we come to the end of life's journey, may we be accounted worthy.
Some will, some won't. So what?
Yeah.
So this was a group that was a modern-day offspring of the Anabaptist movement.
Yes, it is. Their heritage is Anabaptist, yes.
And Anabaptists were probably one of the most outlawed or hated or reviled or persecuted. Uh-huh. In fact, you know, here is an interesting statistic that that just always fascinates me. Because I was raised to believe Catholics had hair on their teeth. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200. Go straight to hell through a chute in the basement. But when my and we were taught all about the Spanish Inquisition and how Catholics hated Protestants and killed them, and Fox's Book of Martyrs, all that stuff. But, you know, more people were killed because over the issue of adult baptism by Protestants than any other group, by any other group in history that we have historical records on. Is that not something? So you spoke, is it called Pennsylvania Dutch? You spoke a dialect?
No, the whole Amish and Old Order Mennonite thing of calling the world English and we speak Dutch. No, the church started in Schwarzenau, Germany. I think that's the only reason it has the word German in the name. There was no German speaking in that group at all.
What was a typical week like for you? Like, did you have, like, I had more services than I could count at my church. Was that?
No, it was not like that. They were not big on a lot of services because, for one thing, there was no, the ministry is not paid. They don't take up money, so there's no reason to have more church than the folk like, you know. You don't want to burden the people with more church services.
How do they pay their land taxes?
Every quarter of the year, they have what they call a council meeting, and they just take up money. And it's in the treasury to pay bills and so forth. No extra money taken up than what the churches, you know, than what the church needs for their own individual bills. You know, to keep the lights on and the heat on and so forth.
No tithing, no offerings.
No.
Why did you leave?
Oh, my goodness.
That's a deal. Yeah, that is a good deal. I know people in the GO who'd love to go know a church like that.
Yeah, if you need church, you know, if you got to go to church, why, that would be an inexpensive one. But, you know, it's so full of lies and power, manipulation. Well, just like any other church system, really.
Tradition plays a big part.
Yep. Steeped in what the old brethren have done.
Now, if you left that church, were you going to go to hell?
Yep. That was very much a part of their method of keeping you in the church, keeping you faithful. I know they wouldn't just come out and say it to my face, but their belief definitely is that if you leave the church, you're going to hell. That's just that simple. And of course, they would say it's not their words; it's God's words. But there's so many verses in the Bible. You can use one or another to your advantage, no matter. And you know that goes for me too. I apply that same rule to me. I realize I'm kind of picking and choosing. Everybody does, but I look at the gospel. I look at the word overall, especially the old writings, the scriptures. Look at the story, not just the words, each individual word, but you look at the stories themselves and the meaning behind them, the types and shadows and what God did in Adam. It just directly relates. In fact, I kind of think that the old scriptures did a better job of saying what the Redeemer is going to do when he comes than the new writings did of telling what he did and what it means to us.
That's interesting.
It's like the prophecies were better than historical writing.
The shadow was better than the substance, almost.
Exactly, yes.
Now, you were in this denomination from a kid?
Yes, oh yeah. My ancestry goes back, you know, as far back as we talk about. Grandpa, great-grandpa, great-great, you know, and both sides of my family, both sides of my wife's family, you're just all locked up in it. And so when we left, there was kind of a bit of an exodus at about that time. There was quite a few of us that left, actually. Maybe 35 or 40 families left because of, I think, our district in particular. Now, the church is scattered across the nation, but our district in particular had become very conservative. You know, it's like stepping on a bar of soap. When they're under that pressure, something's going to squirt. So we went.
Now, when you leave the church, are you disfellowshipped in as much as you are anathema or dead to your family members and friends?
Not to the extent like the Amish observe. They don't use the word shunning. It does take place. Yes, it is there, but they don't observe it. They don't call it shunning. They don't observe it formally as such. But, you know, you see somebody on the street or somewhere and they go the other way or don't know you. They don't want to talk to you. I remember my dad as much as told us boys growing up that do your own thinking. He used that line on lots of things, whether it was a feed salesman or whatever it was that somebody was trying to sell you. Don't just listen to them. Do your own thinking. Well, little did he know that all of his boys were going to leave the church due to doing their own thinking. But he had also taught us, you know, contrary to the teachings of the church, a personal relationship with Jesus is possible and good. He believed in prayer and he believed in faith, all things that I've since, you know, left go. But those are things that were stepping stones to bring me out of that church, because the church does not believe in any one of those. They discourage Bible reading. They discourage Bible meetings, Bible study. They say anybody that gets to study in the Bible too much, it gets them into trouble. They leave the church. So, and there's some truth to that.
Yeah, that, I reckon that's true. Hey, so you were saying you've got an ultra-pure pedigree, goes back generation from generation.
Yeah, yep.
But so your dad was hardcore from birth, brought you up, and yet he had the – it was almost like it's written on his heart. You can think for yourself.
He was an elder in the church, highly respected, well-traveled, and I remember it was almost like he was telling us boys, between the lines, he was telling us, the truth isn't here, boys, it's going to be out there somewhere. So it almost – in a subtle way saying, and he didn't even know it, but he was saying, go search for the truth.
If the Bible is all about Jesus, don't you think that most churches would mention him with at least the same frequency as they mention all of their favorite dogmas and doctrine and all those rules of your particular brand of religion? Tithing, moralism, Old Testament law, abortion, gays, politics, all hail the leader, persecution, the end times, don't forget the bloody rules, God's perfect will for your life, fleeing you, youthful lusts, rock music, speaking in tongues, the coming kingdom, worldliness and how to escape it, those pesky rules, don't forget them, heresy, prophecy, soul-winning, missions, offerings, wrong doctrine, right doctrine, and don't forget all those bloody rules, relationships, long hair, short hair, dyed hair, liberalism, greasy grace, Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve, dispensationalism, and rules, rules, never-ending bloody rules, and Calvinism, Arminianism, a missionary service, Sunday school, swearing and cussing, besetting sin, sexual purity. Oh, and give us some more rules, won't you? False prophets, confession, dress code, mixed swimming, dancing, movies, television, dating. Oh, and did I mention the freaking rules?
Spread the religion of the rhythm of life. Gospel revolution.
Yeah, so I just became nobody. And that it was almost a freeing feeling. While I left the pride of being known, it was almost a freeing feeling. I didn't have to live up to anything. I could just be me and have my own identity, my own reputation in the community. All of my family has left. We can't really talk openly. You know, it's kind of funny, and I'm sure a lot of the listeners know what this is like too. The more religious in your family, they can talk freely about their beliefs. They can make comments about the coming of the Lord and revelations. They can talk about the Antichrist and how this world's falling apart and it's going to be a one world system and blah, blah, blah. They can throw this lingo around, and we kind of have to just sit there and be quiet and take it, because if we speak up and counter it, now we got an elephant in the middle of the room. We got a mess, a family mess, you know. And so I've tried both methods. I've tried to just stay off of it, and then I just have to sit there and take all those comments, which I don't do very well. Or I speak up, and then we kind of we're crossways.
Then you got a bigger mess.
Yeah. It seemed like it's kind of a continual frustration either way, though. It's a tug and pull. I don't really like it. We're not – my family, we take our beliefs very seriously. We feel very deeply, and I think there's a little too much arrogance Maybe it's back to that narcissism of not being willing to let somebody else express their views and just let it run off of you like water off a duck's back, so to speak. Just whoopee. I'm not good at that. My family's not good at it. When there's a disagreement in the family, suddenly there is a charge in the room. And so my family's not real skilled at that.
You wrote a book, didn't you?
Think and Be Free. The reason I named it that is because I felt like in my journey, all I had to do, the power of freedom, the beauty, the privilege of freedom lay just in the power of my mind. Just think logically. Just think your way to freedom, whether it's financial freedom or religious freedom, whatever it is. You can be in a prison physically and be free, or you could be out free and be bound and be in a prison in your mind. And so if that's possible, then you can be as free as you want just by the power of thinking. I wanted to tell my story, like back at the beginning of this little interview when you said, what's your story? I just wanted to share my story, and then it led into how to think about people, valuing people, understanding that people are going through crap in their everyday life. So give people space. People are frustrated. They're learning. They're growing. They're dealing with issues. So give them room. So it was a bit about people, and then it kind of led over into the gospel and what I believe the truth to be. Everybody's got a belief. Here's mine. That was the sort of thing I wanted to get to.
What kind of motorbike you got, Grant?
I don't have any right now.
You don't have a motorbike?
No, I had a couple of them, but I sold the second one. The first one burnt in our barn when it burnt, and then the second one, well, I wrecked it, Barris.
What happened, buddy?
So I sold it. I was just tooling through town, and a car came out from my right side and smashed into the side of me and boogered me up pretty good.
What happened?
I ended up hitting my head pretty good, took a chunk out of my arm, and ended up losing my right leg below my knee. So I've got a nice prosthesis that I've been on now for almost 2.5 years, and it works good for me. I'm able to – well, see, I got out of the hospital the end of September of 2011, and that next spring, doctors told me I would be back walking in 6 months. And I was. Right at about 6 months, I was back walking, and I have a swimming pool service, and I opened about, 80 pools in a spring, and did all the service throughout the summer, closed them all that fall, and so I feel good to be getting along as good as I am. I really do.
Now, when this happened to you, did you ever get some of those old feelings? What did I do wrong that God would do this to me?
No. Nope, I did not at all. I knew it was just simply a matter of physical timing, you know, just no. And I had done enough reading various books like Wayne Dyer, but also I think the gospel giving me a full acceptance, knowing that we can do nothing wrong, nothing to take away from our holiness and perfection. It just gave me a rock solid basis, a rock solid foundation on which to base my thinking. And I just accepted it that day that it just is what it is. This is my new life. I don't have 2 feet anymore. I'll just get on like this.
Now, so, last time I heard you talking about this was actually on a show, must be 3 years ago. And you were talking about being the observer in your own life.
Uh-huh. Okay.
What was that like?
Do you mean being the observer in connection with this accident and or just in general?
Either.
Okay. I guess I only know how to apply it as in general. And I know that I live life that way, just kind of an objective or from the outside view of myself, my thoughts and feelings. Why do I think and feel the way I do? Maybe I'm in a conversation with someone and they say something that makes me feel like I need to add to it to show them that I'm also knowledgeable on that subject, or
yeah.
And right there I think, why do I need that?
Mm.
Why can't I just sit and be quiet
and
let them be the knower in that subject or that comment? Just be at rest. Just be content with who I am, secure. And I guess in asking those questions, you are forced to answer them. And in the answers, you discover what makes you tick and why you have the needs you do. And you can get past them. You can grow. You don't have to correct them. You don't have to make an effort to improve. For one thing, before God, there's no need to improve. The only reason to improve at all would just be to set yourself free and so that you don't say things that hurt people in conversations. Hurt them as in the manner of making them feel like you have to be superior somehow. Exalting them, making them feel awesome to be talking with you. Making them feel significant and valued. Whenever we discover some truth about ourselves, some lack, I really believe that just the discovery itself and the acknowledgement of it is all we need. That's the seed for improvement and growth. All we have to do is just be aware of it, and our subconscious mind will go to work to correct that thing. We can just rest. We don't have to think, okay, now I need to work on that. No, you don't. If you try to work on it and improve it, you will just end up manufacturing an artificial improvement, and therefore you're fake. And I like to be genuine and authentic. I like that. So you just observe it, acknowledge it, and let it go.
Now, Grant, back in the day, God was everything to you, or at least your life was centered around some facsimile of God, or some facsimile of what... of a facsimile of God.
Yes, you got it.
Now, what part does God play in your life now?
Boy, that's an interesting question. Because I do not, you know, for one, first off, I really believe that I am one with God. God is one with us. We are all of one spirit. We are just about as close to, we are as close to being God as you could be without just saying that I am God. You know, we don't hardly have words for what I'm trying to describe.
I like that.
But anyway, and so I don't pray to him as such. I don't pray to some outward entity outside of myself. I don't think of him as outside of myself. I think of him in me. I think of him as me. I am the outward expression of something he's wanting to do in my little circle of this universe, as is everyone else. And so I leave it there. I thank him. I value what he did back there at Calvary to make this possible. You know, words just fail me, Barris. It just...
What do you tell your kids?
This same thing, I guess. You know, just day in and day out, little here, little there. And, you know, my kid, I have four kids, and they range from ages 27 to 17, and they don't have strong – they don't quite have the passion for it I do, for one thing. They haven't journeyed life. They haven't gone through life as long as I have. Secondly, they don't have the experience of being under that extreme bondage that I did, and the darkness and the ignorance and arrogance, for that matter. And so this is very valuable to me. I'm passionate. I eat and sleep this message. But it's not in them that way. That's okay. They're just more relaxed about life. If they believe anything at all, they believe the gospel message. But they believe it. They're like on gospel light.
Gospel light.
It's the
light.
Gospel, but it's light. But that's not, it's like, I guess I'm kind of happy about that. Rather than them being on something else. Oh, my God, the worst thing they could do is start going to church, going back into that legal religious system. That would break my heart.
Okay, but there must be some church out there that they'd enjoy, wouldn't they? You know, a good music presentation, a nice band, a couple of jokes, a poem or two, and a message. And
there is. It's called, for my older two especially, it's called, I'm trying to think of one that would be everywhere. Claude and Annie's Bar and Grill.
That sounds like my kind of church.
Yeah, yeah. They just live life based on consequences and good judgments. I tried to teach them that way. See, I started out doing like a lot of parents do under the religious system. It's all about image, all about you making me look good. And therefore, you're the cop and they are the civilians or whatever. And I got to make them behave, catch them in the wrong act so I can, you know, that really makes it sound bad. Not so that I can get after them. I didn't want to. I wanted them to do right. But when I did discover they had said something or done something they shouldn't have, I felt like I had to get on them about it. And oh, my land, once the gospel had its effect in my heart and mind, and I began to see that God loved me and forgave me, even the way I lived life and made choices, that began to flow outward to them. And I just enjoy them now. That's just all. They are good kids. They made good decisions. They are good citizens. And they've all been homecoming king and queen candidates. And I say that only because we homeschooled them until they were about, well, the older two until they were seventh grade, the younger ones more like third or fifth grade. And we always, and that's because that's left over from our religious past, but we were always concerned they would be odd or weird, you know, and be rejected somewhat in public schools. And so for them to be so well accepted and liked, it meant a lot to me. To see them fit in and be appreciated, and so that's the story on them. About adjusting to this real world, you know, that has been it's ongoing. Even though it's been, well, we left in 95 alive.
So you've been free from since 95.
Yes, and I thought we would. It took a while. It took a while till I started wearing jeans, blue jeans, instead of my broad falls. And my wife, Darla, took her covering off because we were taught that the covering is there's a special power in the covering that holds off. You know, you might say Satan can't get to you and mess with your life as long as the lady wears a covering. Well, anyway,
you got like our Mormon friends. They have magic underwear.
Yeah, yes, it's really like that.
Okay.
It's the same thing, only they put it on their head instead of, okay. I mean, not their underwear, but a covering.
Oh, well, I'm glad you cleared that up for us. The picture of lederhosen clothed people wearing their underwear on their head and washing each other's feet, it wasn't a picture I wanted to have all day, mate.
Yeah. but
I got in my mind. Sorry.
Acclimating to the real world and continues to be a process. We go to our kids' football games, baseball games, and we go in the bleachers, and I can just tell that all the other parents relate to each other in a way that we just don't get it. We don't fit in. I say it's like this. You can say this culture shock is like from one country to another. No, I've had boys from Germany, exchange students in my home with my kids, and they know more about American TV and the music artists and the actors than I did as a German Baptist. It's like moving in from another planet or something. And because we really didn't know anything about
did you have TV
shows, music.
Did you have a TV in your home?
No.
Did you have a radio in your home?
No radios, tape players, TVs, no.
Record players?
No.
Wow.
No, if it could play music. In fact, a few people were nervy enough to have a harmonica, there we go. A few people had those, but not really even supposed to have those because it made music, you know, and couldn't even, if you had a wedding, you couldn't even have flowers in your wedding. Now, isn't that weird? A harmonica that makes beautiful tones and flowers that God made and is beautiful. Nope, can't have them. It makes it too pretty.
Wow.
It had to be plain, black and white. Don't try to make sense of it. Because you won't make sense of it.
Mate.
You'll just confuse yourself.
You're not confusing me because I was brought up what we called a close brethren home. We had no TV, no radio, no record players. Once when I did bring a record home, my mother broke it. And when I went out and mixed with other people, I had to pretend that I knew what they were talking about. Now, there's a lot of people who don't know what that means, but you do.
Yes, I do.
So, and you try to explain this to people outside, and their eyes glaze over. They don't get it.
Right. No. They don't understand what you're saying. They've never felt that. But, yep.
So
that's the truth of it.
How did you hear the gospel?
Well, you know, it's almost like the more you read, things kind of begin to stir in your own heart and mind. And then it's almost like maybe in your own mind you've built a little put together a little box of tinder. And then somebody says something that is the spark on that tinder, and it just bursts into a little flame.
That's a good way. That is a great way of putting it.
Uh-huh. Ted McMullen, good fellow down in Indianapolis, asked me the question once, were you redeemed because you believed, or did you believe because you were redeemed? And that was the first question that I heard that really made, you know, the answer to that question is quite revealing.
Yes.
And so I kind of began to take it from there, and then I just could not get away from Romans 5, the last few verses there. And from there, you know, it's just history. It's just one verse after another, and then you go back and you begin to study the scriptures and the prophets, and you know the rest of the story from there, really. It's like everybody else's. You talk here, you talk there, you ask questions, and people's answers, even though they try to convince you otherwise, you cannot make theirs make sense. It just no longer makes sense that God is going to create people, his children that he loves, and then just barbecue them somehow for the sadistic fun of it.
Yes, God loves you so much that he created hell just in case you didn't love him back.
Yes, that's right. Yep. And then if that's the case, you know, sin and death is eternal, and Satan is the victor.
Yeah, really. Not just the victor over one or two or a couple of dozen people, but the victor apparently over 80% or 90% of the world.
That's right, yes. And actually, I would say Christianity is Satan worshiping, because they make Satan to be the greater being than God, and they set him up much greater than God himself.
Well, when I left the Brethren many years later, I came into Pentecostalism. And, I mean, Pentecostalism talks more about the devil than God.
Yes, I believe it.
Yeah, and it's, we're going to do this to kick his butt, and we're going to do that, and we're going to claim the blood of Jesus.
You're going to bind him every which way you can.
Oh, binding.
Yep.
Don't even get me started on binding and loosing.
Uh-huh. Yep, I hear
you. When you're feeling down, or you got the case of the blues, why don't you listen to the Gospel Revolution?
Gospel Revolution.
I have learned so much from Mike. That's where I'm at right now. I'm down here at Mike Williams. And it's not that I believe everything he says. I do my own thinking. But it so happens that a lot of what he says makes sense, and he has revealed a lot to me. Just explaining the nuts and bolts of the gospel. I like it. He'll go through a chapter, and instead of getting off on a lot of stories from his childhood, he stays right in, let's say, Paul's writing or one of the scriptures or something from one of the prophets or whatever, and he'll just tell you what things mean, and it makes too much sense for me to reject. I don't agree with him on everything, but that's fine. I still have learned a lot from him.
How did you meet him?
Well, Ted McMullen asked me that question, and then just a couple months later, he had Mike in their home, along with some other gospel revolutionaries there from Indianapolis, and we met in Ted's basement, and Mike was there and sat on a chair in front of us with his big long legs out and halfway out in the room, I thought. And he just told us, I think he kind of started out asking us if it sounded like something God would do, that he would redeem the world. Is it possible that he did it? Yeah, I guess those two. Does it sound like something God would want to do? And do you believe it's possible that God could do it? And, you know, the answer to those questions, yes and yes.
Yeah.
There you go.
Wow. What would you like to say to all the gospel revolutionaries out there, Grant?
Well, I don't know. You know, each one is doing their own thing. Their heart is pondering it as they drive down the road and they're at work. asking questions and searching for answers, and they're doing it at the rate that they want to. I don't really know that I don't have any words of wisdom, Barris. They're already doing what they want to do, growing in it, in the truth, and being set free. And I one thing I'd like to ask them, sometimes you have question whether it's true or not. How would you like to go back? Can you see yourself going back to where you were 5 years ago?
Well, that is a great segue to the next question I had for you.
Okay. All right.
What would Grant Miller of 2014, now you came out in 1995. What would the Grant Miller of 2014 say if he could speak to the Grant Miller of 1993?
I would say quit making decisions about your beliefs based on fear. Stop the fear. Just relax and trust God's love. Believing that the New Testament is inspired, that it is without error, is God-breathed, is based on fear. Because I know my dad would say, Grant, if we just let that go, we have nothing to stand on. And I say, that's all right. That is totally fine with me, because I can just rest knowing that God has nothing but good for us. And so whether I have something to stand on or not, something to guide my beliefs or not, is fine. I think the gospel sets you free to be able to try on, I'm going to say, in quotation marks, try on any belief out there, any breeze that blows. Just give it a go. Try it on like you try on a pair of coveralls at Big R. When you try them on, you don't stand there and look at them. You put them on. You zip them up. You fully see if they're going to fit you. And that's the way I try on various beliefs, without fear. I think as a German Baptist, they had the belief that if you even so much as listened to some false belief, it would get you. It would snag you such that when you walk away from that conversation, you would not entirely rid yourself of it. You know, it would be some of it stuck on you. It's contagious. It got you. And just forget the fear. Just relax. And I am free to explore any belief that comes around, even if it's satanic. Just explore it, look at it, observe it, learn from it, and then I am free. I can take them back off and hang them back up on the rack because they don't fit. And I have no fear. God has only good for everyone. You know, if he don't have good for some of us, then he intends no good for any of us. It's all or nothing. So he's either a terrible, mean God. You know, bear a second to the gospel. If the gospel isn't true, I'm going atheism. There's no second religion to fall back on. The Christian God isn't true. I'm not going Buddhism or Hinduism or, you know, if the gospel isn't true, then there'll be no God at all. It's just that simple to me. It's like a sponge in a swimming pool, a whole bunch of sponges. The water's in the sponge and the sponges are in the water. We're all one. We are all one being, one spirit. We're just individual expressions of that spirit. You know, one question that bugs my mind sometimes is, I guess two questions. Why do those of us that know the truth get to see it? It's a privilege. And how did we get here? And secondly, why didn't the gospel? I don't quite understand. I believe that the earth, the heaven and the earth was made new at the cross. If we could see the heavens and the earth with spiritual eyes, we would see that it indeed both were made new. But why not? Why not our bodies and minds? Why only part of it? Why do we still have sickness and disease, and they're still killing and rapes and so forth? Why was this not a full redemption? I'm not really sure.
Do you think that we could be instrumental in changing the boundaries of death or sickness or wars?
I guess I don't feel so. And even if we could, it seems to me that whatever redemption, you know, when Adam, the fall of Adam, that death, that curse that he endured was sudden and it was complete.
And if the world, in the construct of the new creation, why do women still have pain in childbirth? So I understand what you're saying. Yeah. I do get what you're saying, and they're good questions.
And, you know, from a spiritual standpoint, I hear people put forth the thought that, you know, that it's progressive, that we are being redeemed. No, I think the spiritual death that Adam experienced, it was total and it was complete and it was immediate. It was a moment. It was in the moment. And so I think the same has taken place with us, only the opposite direction at the cross. It is not progressive. But it seems limited, like those areas we named about. I don't understand that. Back to that first question also, you know, I've tried to consider why we get to believe the gospel, see the gospel, live as a result of that gospel freedom. Does it just make sense to certain minds logically? If so, why aren't there more people? Why so few? I don't understand some of those things.
Well, like I said before, 100% for honesty.
Yeah.
And that's the only place we can really move forward from. If we, the moment we have the answer, well, that's one less part of the truth that we need, isn't it? And whether we're right or wrong.
That's right. Yeah, that's true. Hey, you know, something else I'll share is, and I know I wouldn't have to put this out there, but if it can help anybody, I went through a time in my life, probably, oh, well, my goodness, it started 20 years ago. I'm going to try to speed this right along, a short story, but gradually feeling like my wife and I were on two pages. We weren't chopping in the same notch, viewing life very differently, and that just increased. The gap between us got wider and wider, and I was interested in the gospel and talked about it. I ate it and breathed it. And as I shared it with her, she was somewhat interested, believed it, but she didn't have to be talking about it or thinking about it as much as I did. And I wasn't content with that. I wanted a partner. I wanted her to, you know, be a mirror of my feelings. And it just escalated to the point that I met another lady who seemed very interested in me and gave me what I wanted to hear and was interested in the gospel and just ate up everything I put down, you know, and ended up moving out. And I was tormented to know what to do because I knew that I loved my wife.
You say that you moved out of home?
Yeah, uh-huh. I did because I knew I really didn't want to, but I knew that I could not do that to her. I forced myself to make a decision so that I wasn't dragging her along. And I moved. I was out. I lived in a little house in town for 3 months and back to trying on those coveralls. I somewhat gave myself freedom. You know, in that church, when you're trying to find a partner in a church like we are with costumes on, you don't know who you are and you don't know who others are. You don't really know your authentic self.
Yeah, but you get a good look at them. Didn't the old German brethren, didn't they have women on one side and men on the other of the church? I mean, you could check out the market, couldn't you?
Yes, but everybody's, yes, you can, but everybody's acting so fake. You're all actors. You're trained to be actors because it's all about image. So everybody is behaving nicely on the surface, but you don't know yourself. And so, and I got married when I was 18. So here I am, just a young kid trying to find a partner for life. And everybody's got a costume on, including myself. And so I don't know myself. I don't really even know the girl that I'm dating. Time goes on. 27 or 26 years later, I'm not sure who I really am or what I want. And I just somewhat gave myself liberty to step back and take a look and figure out who I am and what I really want. And read some books. I remember calling Jeff, talking to him about it, talking to Mike about it, talking to Kurt Hufford about it, a cousin of mine. And anyone who would listen and that would non-judgmentally try to help me look at it openly, objectively, and honestly. And because I wanted the greatest number of people to be happy. I wanted to make the right decision that led to happiness in the long run. I knew this was hurting people in the present, but I was looking down the road years. If my wife, if I'm not really going to be with her in love, then I might do her a favor to let her move on. And yet, you know, I was her best friend. So this was very hurtful to her.
How long did it last for?
It lasted probably 3 or 4 months. Well, she discovered it at my accident. It was terrible, Barris. I'm telling you. She was in the hospital. We were in the hospital. I was barely in my senses enough to answer honestly because of medication when she asked me if I was talking to somebody else. And I told her that I was. And, you know, it tore her up. I was her best friend in life. And then it wasn't until May or so of the next year that I moved out.
I imagine in that church that you both belonged to, you didn't remarry.
No, you couldn't be a member remarried. Nope, you're right.
So you, regardless of whether you'd left the church or not, back in your head here, it's still saying, this is it. And if he leaves me, what's the future then? What do we do? Wow.
I'm going to differ with you there on that one, because I really think, Barris, the gospel had a total renewing effect, at least in that area also. And that is, there was no fear that we couldn't find other partners.
Oh, okay. So,
that was not present at all. But okay. She didn't want to be with anybody else.
Oh, wow.
And, but anyway, I had to kind of remove myself from the forest so I could actually see the trees. And I think in doing that, that's actually what, even though it was so hard, it was a terrible time in our life, yet I worked through it. I did a lot of talking to people and thinking, and I just went about life. I was in the middle of my swimming pool business, and so I stayed busy and lived by myself and working through it. Read a couple books and learned a lot about myself and about narcissism and about misreading and misperceiving her love, and that we were missing each other more out of misperception than actually not caring about each other or not involved in the other one's life. We've always been very much of a family, doing things together, and we were, you know, very. We never ate supper scattered. We always ate supper as a family, and so that's kind of the way we lived life. But anyway, back to living in that little house in town. It gave me enough time to get my thoughts together and figure out who I was and what I wanted. And we were seeing a counselor through all this process. I did not want a Christian counselor. To me, a Christian counselor only confuses the subject. They make things about guilt and about sin and about repentance and about forgiving and about God. And I did. That's missing the point. I wanted to get right down to brass tacks of who I am and what I need and why I have those needs and my insecurities and how I'm misperceiving my wife, Darla, so we could make a decision of which way I'm going to go and not hurt and hurt the fewest number of people and bring happiness, restore happiness and health to my family if we could. I ended up moving back home, and I'm telling you, I am so much happier now. I learned a lot about myself. I understand my wife, Darla, better. We have a better relationship than ever before. Now, I'm not telling this story to get to that point. It's not going to go that way for everybody. Some people are going to choose to go on. That's okay. My main thing about this story is to encourage people to try on those coveralls, fully put them on, zip up the zipper, snap the snaps, in other words. Do explore, step back in your life, step back a couple steps, so that step out of the forest so that you can get a good look at the trees. Be willing to, don't worry about what people are going to think. It's your life. Life is short, but yet at the same time, life is too long to live in a sort of hell. So do that thing you need to do to figure it out. One of the bigger things gospel has done for me, like a thief, the gospel has taken away so many things from me. It's taken away guilt and fear, self-effort, judgment of other people. The gospel has set me free to fully explore various thoughts and beliefs. The gospel has allowed me to accept and value all people, learning from them. Everyone out there is my teacher, some way.
Say goodbye to the nice people.
Well, this has been great, Barris. I've enjoyed this time with you, and I hope all our listeners have enjoyed it and picked up something from it. And so goodbye to everyone until they hear my voice again or I theirs.
Grant Miller, it's been fantastic talking with you. Thanks so much for your time, buddy. And enjoy yourself at Mike's. And ask him to cook you some ribs, by the way. He's damn good at it.
All right. I will do that. Thanks, Barris.
Okay,
enjoy
buddy.
It.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Yep.
The gospel says the war is done. Guilt and judgment, there is none. The Father's covenant with the Son made God and human family one. God and man enjoy the gain. That stealthy gospel rides again. Before the light had dawned in me, difference was all that I could see. Oh, if you don't pray the sinner's prayer, you're on your way to hell's despair. But now, I know we're all the same. A stealthy gospel rides again. New wine in old skins cannot stay. New skin's a must, or the old will burst, and old and new will fall away. New wine's a fountain from within. That stealthy gospel rides again. How well I see in life's rear view, my criticism came undone. My mind began to open up, judging had a softer touch. I am so free, so calm, so sane. That stealthy gospel rides again.
Listen in your office, in your car, or even your neighborhood bar. You can listen with your whole family. Do a
gospel revolution.
And so it is that we must leave you, folks. We love you one and all, and we especially thank all who, with your financial support, keep this message of grace and peace going out every week. If you'd like to join them in increasing our coverage of this gospel of grace and peace, call our office at area code 321-220-4373 and speak to Jeffrey. If you would like to leave a message for the show, simply telephone me on area code 234-564-0971. Our web address is www.gospelrevolution.com, and we are always up for a Facebook chat at Friends of Mike Williams and the Gospel Revolution. Thanks to Marcel Ross in the Netherlands, all the gospel all the time is being broadcast 24/7 at myradiostream.com/gospelrevolution. And so it's good night from myself, Barris Bartlett, from the Gospel Revolution Studios here in Nashville, Tennessee.
And it is good night from Michael Williams. Thank you guys so much. We always have such a joy doing this, and to have another one of the authors of the Gospel Revolution in our midst has been just really fantastic. And also, if you have any questions, not just for us, but also for Grant Miller, be sure and contact him. I know Barris has his email address and contact information. So, Barris, tell us.
Grant Miller's email address is tbfnow@gmail.com. That stands for Think and Be Free Now. So his address is Tango Bravo Foxtrot November Oscar Whiskey. That is tbfnow@gmail.com. I don't have his phone number, but his email will get that for you, I'm pretty sure. Remember to join us again next week, same time, same channel, where we're going to do the same thing all over again.
Well, it's just going to be me and you. Is it going to be better?
It's always better.
Okay.
Looking at the world through a stained glass window, Dividing lines define our kind of truth. But bits of covered glass couldn't pass for a rainbow, or the beauty of its ever-blending hues. Likened to a point of view that I can understand, the Father set his hand to write a song. Then down through the ages, notes on scattered pages, and pulled it all together when the final age had dawned. Every wind, everyone, come and see what God has done. He took his firstborn son and he hung him on a tree. He bore the sin and pain and hung his head in shame and passed through the flames for you and me. Focusing on clues, you can lose your direction and miss the forest for the trees for a time. But a flood and a boat in a many-colored coat led me to this rendezvous with all mankind. Every wind, everyone, don't you see the harvest's come and gone? We've all become fellow heirs with Christ. The first man died in sin, but we were all inside of him. The second Adam took us in. We all died the second death, and then we've been to hell and back again and entered into life. Looking at the world through a stained glass window, dividing lines define all kinds of truth. But bits of broken glass could never pass for a rainbow or the beauty of its ever-blending hues.
I should put the right headphones on. That's what I should do, and then I can hear you. How can a man get to be so old and still be so stupid?
You didn't put your ears on.
My God, what is your... What part of your body is that?
I see a picture. I don't know what that is. It's a still.
I think it's Grant's leg. I think you're pointing it at Grant's leg.
It does look like Grant's leg. Oh, that's a picture of the computer and the table. I don't know why. Oh,
could the
that's because it's laying on the computer.
I just spat my teeth out laughing. Oh, oh God. You stick with us, mate. We'll have you f***ing through silk before you finish. You'll be a real tech head just like the rest of us.
Yeah, you have it in your own headphones, and I've got the video camera laying on the table, wondering why it's got a picture of the table.
God, that's funny. Okay, microphone.
You know, it's not the people who agree with us, it's the people who question us that help us make progress. That's how we've done it since day one. What are your thoughts on what we've just been talking about? Why don't you call me on area code 234-564-0971 and let us know what you think about that. Else you can just email us at freedom@gospelrevolution.com. That was freedom@gospelrevolution.com. What do you think about that?
Gospel Radio.